are. The lights. There it is. 5:29. Lovely to have your company on this Friday afternoon. We tick, tick, tick. Get closer to tonight's game, and a big game it is. The Western Bulldogs and Essendon. A man who knows both clubs profoundly is Adam Cooney. A man who understands the rivalry that exists between the two of them. It's a quiet rivalry that lives between Essendon and the Western Bulldogs, isn't it?
Is it simmering away under the surface somewhere?
There's always been a little rivalry between these two, hasn't there?
I think there's a bit of rivalry between the recruiters, maybe.
Well,
given that Adrian Dodoro has tried unsuccessfully and successfully on occasion to prize a few players out of there.
True.
I didn't take much prizing out of there. It was more of a swift boot to the backside to get me out of the kennel. But Josh Dunkley was one, I think. It was a sticking point for a while there when he was under contract with the Dishies and they tried to get him over there and ended up going to Brisbane. Stringer, obviously. Myself. Mark Alvey, another one.
I saw Mark Alvey today. He was bouncing around the joint. So
yeah, he does some work at the Sports and Entertainment Network in Mildura,
yes,
I believe.
That's exactly right.
The Fez.
Where were you in 2000? Year 2000.
Where was I in the year 2000? I would have been in year 10.
Do you remember? Were you watching much footy in those days?
I used to watch the odd game, maybe once every two or three
weeks. Because arguably in the modern era,
I only used to watch when the Blues were on, Andy.
Of course you did. Well, this game didn't feature the Blues. Of course, it was the epic flood game that Terry Wallace concocted to beat the previously unbeaten that year, all-conquering Essendon Footy Club.
Right, and it was a Chris Grant snap around that was the left to
foot.
Seal it.
Correct.
I remember
Nathan Eagleton had the set shot, and it's
was
actually
it a, was it a Nathan Eagleton with a hairline back in those days?
He did have hair in the he did. He's still hair. It was with hair, and he had a set shot from about 35 out on the wrong side for the left footer, just worse than 45, missed by 30 metres. And then the ball sort of...
Kick it on his right, did he?
No, he did not. Set shot. And then it was sort of bouncing around the boundary. And Dustin Fletcher, it's bounced off his boot, gone out of bounds on the full, and given Chris Grant the chance to do what he did. Bruce McAvaney went on to call it in the final. Have we got the call? Have we got the audio, Julio?
Juliana.
This is what... So in the final moments, as it's becoming patently obvious that the Western Bulldogs are going to do what nobody else had done, having created this game plan... the likes of which we'd never seen before in terms of the depth of players back. This is what McAvaney had to say about Terry Wallace's coaching performance.
They'll get home. Has anybody coached a better game than Terry Wallace? Then Smith's come onto the ground. They've done it.
They've won it!
That gets them in the finals.
Has anyone ever coached a better game than Terry Wallace was the quote. Now Macca is a great student of the game and all of the games. So he wouldn't have just been throwing that out. Your game, Keith, I reckon basketball would lend itself more to radical plans from a coach.
Set plays and things you can work on.
It's a lot more difficult these days because of the shot clock, but certainly it is standard practice that when you know you've got a team that you're going up a team that's way more talented, there is a significant discrepancy that making an athletic contest and trying to go with them is you're doomed. The talent and athleticism will prevail. However, if you slow it down, so you slow the ball down and you're shooting the ball in the last, say, 4 to 6 seconds of the shot clock rather than the first four to six, then you're taking the tempo out. And generally, that's when you see those ridiculous upsets. Now, to me, that was an example of that, where they just took the wind out of the ball, chipped it around, tried to make it a shorter game.
Yep.
And they got the reward.
Why don't we see in footy when a team is mismatched? They're clearly, they're up against a team who all pundits, you know that the other team is too good.
No, but hang on.
But we don't do much of this in footy.
No, because they get ridiculed. Look what Hawthorn did. Now, it was unintentional, but that one quarter that they played... When they were chipping it around,
they tried to take the heat out.
They said, you're not learning anything. You're not doing it. It's the wrong way to go. That's not how we want to play. It's not entertaining. And all those things might be true, but sometimes making the game ugly gives you the best chance to win.
Well, not win, but it can limit the damage.
Or win.
And sometimes when you're coming up against someone who is higher than you on the ladder or has more talent or more years down their development, then maybe you can tweak it. We used to tweak our game plan regularly under Rocket.
Radically so, though.
Depending on the team that we would come up against, sometimes we would focus on during the week and a main session using the ball down the boundary.
Yeah.
Because we're coming up against a team that wants to go through the middle. So we would practice all week in terms of how we're coming up against this side to kick the ball down the line around the boundary. Now, generally, with teams that we played under Rocket, he would give us a license to play and go and take the game on as much as we wanted to. But there would be occasions where we'd come up against against teams where we had to tinker with it and maybe go away from what we naturally to try and stop the opposition's flow. That worked on occasion, and sometimes it didn't. So, and I don't know, people probably didn't even pick up on it.
But hang on, to my point, though, is that it takes a lot of courage because...
Of course it does.
Because you're going to get, based on what we saw, which was unintentional...
Yeah, if it backfires,
tried
like
to tweak the plan a little bit, and it went to a really slow possession, kick, mark, and just the commentary externally was... very harsh. So,
but don't you have to be bigger than that?
Well, they are. I mean,
you have to be bigger than that, don't you?
I don't think it would have kept Sam Mitchell up.
No,
hearing that criticism from pundits out there about the way that they played. Yep, they acknowledge they got it wrong. I mean, Brisbane didn't play as fast as what they usually do.
No way.
They sort of chipped their way around them and found those easy options out wide. And they work their way forward pretty well. And it's not the traditional style that we see the Brisbane Lions playing in, but you come up against Melbourne, and who are really strong behind the ball, they just work their way through them at times.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yep.
So if they lost, would we have said, oh, geez, if Lions played with no flair tonight, they just were slow, they chipped the ball around, and it allowed Melbourne to get numbers back. But it actually worked for them, and they methodically worked their way forward and took the heat out of it from when Melbourne beat their midfielders around the footy, and half the job's done. So I thought they did it pretty well. But to your point, what can you do really radically in the AFL now to stop something like that?
It's very hard. 6-6-6 has changed everything, because in that game, the last bounce after Grant kicked the goal, I think the Doggies had two blokes in their forward line. Everybody else started that centre bounce behind the footy, except for the mandatory players.
But,
in the
I mean, you
square.
Can still start to sort of on the edge of the square that can roll back.
Yeah.
But then, and you could do that. You could play two guys behind the footy after a centre bounce. But all that does is gives up territory.
Well, that's what they. And that's so. It's pretty much what they did that day.
It's so important in the modern game now.
Yeah.
Well, it is. Of course, it's going to be the modern game because we're playing it at present. So it's always going to be the modern game when we're talking about it now. But if you roll two players back, you're already behind the eight ball, and you're going to find it, because teams play and train without numbers behind the footy all the time.
Yeah,
and it's about working your way through.
It's a good question.
And picking it back out.
Yep.
So if you do it, you're just giving up territory, and then the ball's going to live in your back half for the majority of the time.
No, it is a good question.
Teams defend on zones so well, even with, you know, sometimes there'll be like 14 on 18. Out there when you're training, and you got to work your way through with that sort of outnumber, and teams quite often work it out.
What are you most looking forward to tonight? Steve wants to talk about the Tigers and the West Coast Eagles before you get off the Dogs and the Bombers.
That's a big one.
What are you most looking forward to? Well, it might be for West Coast.
Could be the first dub, you think?
Yeah, it might be. Tonight.
Well, I think we need to get Nick Martin back on the wing for a start from the Bombers. Now, I know he's amassing some numbers, and isn't it funny, the more disposals you have, the more criticism that you cop about your game.
Like,
if Nick Martin had 35 last week, we're probably just saying, oh yeah, you know, pretty good game, probably might get the two votes. But because he's got himself up to 44, all of a sudden, he was no good.
Yeah.
He just didn't hurt, and maybe he didn't. I thought he played reasonably well with his 44 a couple of weeks ago. And anytime you're getting over 40, you're having a reasonable influence.
I would have thought so.
On a game.
Yeah.
But I think his best work is on the wing. And I think that they are using some other players there that just shouldn't be there. Like Jake Kelly, I mean, he's a sort of defender, third stringer defender who takes the forward, who's inconsistent at times.
Yeah.
But that should be his role.
Yep.
I don't know why he's running up and down on a wing. There's better players suited there. And put Martin there. I don't know what Sardis has been like in the VFL. And I don't know what Caddy's been like, but I'd love to see them play.
I think a lot of us.
I think there's a couple of players that are out there at the moment that are not going to take the club forward, and they're at a stage.
Who?
They're at a stage now. Well, Kelly's one, and Dyson Heppel has been a magnificent leader, and he's playing some reasonable football.
He's actually not the worst at the moment.
He's not by any stretch, and he was really good, and he's so courageous. He would die for that team.
Yep.
Right? And he runs back with a flight, and some of the positions that he puts himself in, you just have to tip your cap to him. But I just, in terms of their ball movement, he and Kelly just slow things up so much and so often. Like, if Dyson Hebel just tweaks his game a little bit and takes it on more, then I think he'll be fine. I'm happy for him to stay in the side. But as he's playing at the moment with ball in hand, I think it stalls the movement that Essendon want. So I think they're too. I mean, Sardis came in for those two. I think that it could be a positive in the long run for Essendon. How are they going to go this year? Like, what
we're going to have a look at him at some stage, aren't we? Like, was he number? Was he taken? Was he five?
He was up there.
We got to see him. Like, you know, it's he's yeah.
Like, what are we going to get as an Essendon? You know, Essendon faithful. What do you want to see for the rest of this year out of that squad?
Oh,
are they going to push for? Are they going to push for a spot in the eight? And if they do, what sort of damage are they going to do? Or do we get 20 games into Caddy?
Okay,
get another 20 into Sardis.
Well, if you got a view on that, feel free to share at 1300 736 736. Steve is in Hurstbridge, just to turn our attention to the last game of the round and the one that's probably, you know, to a large degree off Broadway. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Hey boys, how you doing?
Good.
Hey Steve.
I want to compare the Richmond side with their injuries to West Coast of 2 years ago when they couldn't even field a VFL side or a reserve side, because we're dropping like flies out there. Is it the management of the place, or is it a feeble body of players, or what's the story? Why are they dropping like flies? We've got nobody left.
Nuts. It's become critical now to Tarando and Ross. So,
but I mean the same. I'm pretty sure the same strength and conditioning coach is there from their premiership years. So he's obviously got it right for a long time. That is Luke Meehan. I'm pretty sure he's there. Lloydy, he was at the Dogs for a while. I don't know who runs the sports science stuff from Richmond, but I'm assuming they would. Do they have the same staff there, or have they turned them over and things have gone?
No, you're asking me questions about that I'm not 100% sure of the answer. But
can we get Adam Uze on the phone?
How much of it at AFL level now, given the expertise of these people, you've seen it firsthand, Gazy? You know what it's like at elite level basketball. I've seen it to a degree with the W program and a lot of at Carlton, and a lot of those guys cross over into the AFL program as well.
Darabin under 12s.
Thank you. They're elite at what they do, these people. So how much of it is ever bad management compared to just bad luck?
I think a lot of it is bad luck.
Most of it would be bad luck, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'd say.
Occasionally.
80%?
Yeah.
I reckon would be bad luck. 20% mismanagement? Pushing too far?
Okay. And how much of that's on the S&C gurus compared to the player?
No, I think everyone takes equal responsibility.
Okay.
Because the player has to be frank and upfront about how they're feeling.
Yeah.
But you've all, and the strength and conditioning guys have got to get them to that limit where, you know, they're at their peak without going too far, but you've got to push them to the limit or else they're not going to be
elite.
Well,
that's right, exactly. How coaches, I would imagine, we've spent a bit of time this week talking about old school coaching compared to the modern game. I would suspect that most modern coaches, no matter what they might be thinking internally, are prepared to accept what they're being told by the medical staff.
Well, it depends on the coach. The veteran coaches that maybe have a few rings, sometimes they'll go back to their old school ways and say, listen, we'll take your advice. We hear advice, but this is what we're going to do.
He's playing.
Overruled.
He's playing. There's nothing wrong with him.
And a lot of it comes down to the loads. They talk about loads, how we manage the load. But the problem with
they overmanage loads.
Hey?
I think they overmanage loads.
Well, that's it. And I think the problem that I had with it and is that it can be so different from individual to individual. Now, of course, they generalise and put people into certain categories. But even with that, I think that there can be some vast differences where sometimes players actually play better when they have been overloaded, believe it or not. That it's almost like there's a change of the mindset. It slows them down a little bit. They think a little bit more clearly. They're more careful because they're low. Now that's not always the case, and you are susceptible to injuries under those circumstances. But there are times when, particularly a youngster that's out there, their mind's going a million miles an hour. They're trying to do almost too much, and when they're a little bit more fatigued, it slows them down ever so slightly, so they fall back to a pace and an understanding that's more in tune to what their role is.
And I think if you push yourself to that limit, you are more confident going out there and performing because you know that you've done the work. There's not a little doubt in the back of your mind or the little man that knows, and only you know if you've done
you
everything.
You cheated yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And only you know that. So I think if you do push yourself to those limits, then you feel more confident about performing on game day because that there is no doubt there.
How often?
But by and large, Andy, I think that the science has added to it. But,
no doubt. Yeah,
So I think in general, it's a huge advancement in elite sport. But there are times that I know for a fact, not just with me, but with some basketball coaches, that they are on a different agenda.
They remain skeptical, or they're just on a different agenda.
They understand that the strengths and weaknesses of perhaps potentially a little overload, and they're saying, I would rather risk it with a bit of an overload than they would by just taking to the nth degree. You can only play 22 minutes. Well, how the hell do you come up? What's the difference between 25 or 17? You know?
Yeah.
So it can get a little bit too specific sometimes.
Okay. Barry's in right. Peter Burge, by the way, left Richmond to join Hawthorn at the end of 2022. Your man, Luke Meehan, is the guy currently in charge at Tigerland. Barry's in right. A couple of people do want to talk to you about the Bombers. You threw the question out there. Good afternoon to you, Barry.
G'day, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Just an observation. The Bombers have lost four of their last six games by an average of 12 goals. They were against teams that were better than them, probably. But my question is this, and perhaps Adam's best place to answer it. The coach has been at great length saying that the team is not good enough yet to challenge for a flag. Now, does that give the players an excuse when the going gets tough?
Well, I think maybe subconsciously the players would think that then. If you hear the coach saying it, then obviously that there is that element of, oh, gee, Matt, we are still in this phase. It doesn't stop you from trying your hardest. Mm. But I think it doesn't give the players an out. But I don't know, does it try and relieve internal pressure? Or does it go the other way? But if they're not, and if the coach is saying we're not good enough to challenge for a premiership yet, and it's clear that they're not, then why don't they just pour games into some of the youth?
Yeah. Let me flip side that to you. Damien Hardwick copped a bit of grief early for his comment that 80% of this team's first premiership team are in the room right now.
Yeah.
Now, I think a lot of people thought, come on, Dimmer.
Yeah, but what does it do to the players?
The medicinal stuff's getting the better of you. But then we see three quarters of them on the weekend against the Giants, and you go, hang on. Mm. So there's that. There's the what's he saying it for? But what does that was the question. What does that do to the players?
You'd rather build the belief that way than temper the expectation the other way, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would think so. I'd want to know that the coach thinks that I'm part of a group that he's got expectations of and thinks he's potentially pretty good.
Absolutely, and it's we're seeing the fruits of that at the moment, aren't we?
Johnny's in Blackburn, wants to have a chat about these Essendon young players. Good afternoon to you, mate.
G'day, Andy. Obviously, I'm a Blues supporter, but just the comment about bringing those Essendon youngsters in and playing them, irrespective of how they're going. Andy, you'll remember, Paddy Dow, Lachie O'Brien, Zach Fisher were probably gifted their first 40 or 50 games at Carlton. What do you reckon that did for their long-term development?
Yeah, no, it's a good question.
Well, I can answer that as well. I was gifted my first 20 games in the AFL. And I was overweight, I was not fit enough, and I wasn't up to the level most weeks of playing. But Peter Rode played me every week and might have cost him his job in the end. So I played 20 games of AFL footy in my first year. Didn't get a kick till around 21 of that year. And I actually played pretty well. I think it was the first time I actually felt like I belonged at that level in a whole season of footy. Ended up getting a Rising Star nom that week, played well in the last game of the season, and then from there I felt at home.
Right, remind me how the team was going in those early games, those first 20.
We won three in the first year.
Yeah, okay.
I reckon.
Yeah.
So the benefit of that was I fast-tracked my development, got 20 games in when I probably shouldn't have, and I felt more confident at the level going forward, and then started the year well in my second year of footy, and onwards and upwards from
there.
Yeah,
there is a
downwards after that.
There's no doubt there's a price to pay, John. It's a good observation you got.
I just don't see how playing AFL every week could set you back.
You can't play too many of them. Isn't that the thing? If you've got a bunch of young kids on your list, playing them all at once to fast track all of their. But if you can drip,
yeah. Well, how many first year players are out there tonight for the Bombers?
Well, you've got the squad in front of you, haven't you?
Zero.
Righto.
Yeah. So throw two of them in there. What's the worst that's going
to
happen?
Well, I'm sure they'd love to play Caddy. Well, I don't
Sardis know. Sardis is second year.
Yeah. So he sits in this category for the sake of the argument. I don't know whether Caddy's probably got to play a couple more games, doesn't he? There's not a lot of reps under the belt just yet. Didn't he have a back issue during the preseason or something?
I did ask. Where he was at physically.
Yeah, so he's back playing.
But he's an emergency. He's an emergency.
Yeah, that's right. So
he's
close. Yeah.
So he's fit enough to be playing.
News in from the D's. Clayton Oliver is going to get some finger surgery. He's not expected to miss any games. Mm. Given Melbourne's got the bye this week.
Well, he's not allowed to. As soon as he misses games, the rumour mill goes into overdrive.
Well, that's right. So
he's playing with a snap finger at the moment just so people don't talk about him.
Well, I think he might be playing with a snap finger. So the surgery's coming. Christian Salem's going to miss 4 weeks with that hammy. So last night was fascinating watching Melbourne and Oliver not having any impact clearance-wise, clearly impacted by the finger and then the use of him behind the footy in a role that he's clearly unaccustomed to playing.
Yeah, he looked out of water. Yeah.
But
caught ball watching, which is strange, given that he's a midfielder who just hunts the ball.
But that's right. Yeah, what a figure. But then you go and have a look at their list. You talk about the injuries at Richmond. They are out of players. Melbourne got no players who can play that role at the moment. All the guys who you would go, well, where's who? Where's Bowie? Where's Hall? Where's Spargo? Salem's injured already. He's done the hammy. They're all gone. They're all unavailable, these blokes. So, they're at a critical point. And maybe their view was that a 75% fit Clayton Oliver is better than maybe anyone else we've got who we could potentially throw into that role.
Yeah, and look, if you have a look at their emergency list last night, there's two out of the three at all, so Shaky and Tomlinson, so not a lot of run coming in behind that either.
How is it 5:52? You've only just got here.
Yeah.
Mm. We got to go. We're out of 54. Is that when we're off?
That's what happens, and we just roll along.
I think we're out of. So we're going to get the Cooney medal votes, please. It's round five.
Give Gazy the last 25 minutes off, so he should be fresh for the.
No, I've been enthralled by learning. It's a great education for me.
Finey at one stage.
Round four. Who picked up the votes in the fifth year players? Of course, the fifth year was the year you won your Brownlow, so that's what we're focusing on in the Cooney medal.
Yes, this is correct. Are we going to give one to Ned's son? Flanders?
Nice.
Sam Flanders?
Going nicely.
Isn't he going nicely?
Oh, beautifully. From halfway through last year.
Beautiful.
Yep.
And the two Dockers flying again. We're going to give Caleb Sarong two votes and three to Hayden Young, who hits the lead
in the
Adam Cooney medal.
Well, give me the lead. What is the medal? What is it? It is a prestigious leaderboard. So what is the leaderboard? Do you want me to tell you the leaderboard?
Or have you got it in front of me. I don't have a computer.
Well, there's two Dockers sharing the lead, according to what I've got in front of me. The boy Sarong and the boy Young are tied at the top of the leaderboard on six. And the young fella, Rao.
Yes.
And
just missed out on votes this week, Rao.
If he was a 10% better kick, if he was a 10% better kick of the footy, where he would be at the end of his career, given all of the other stuff he does.
We might get there.
He might. Mm. He might.
If he wasn't injured, he might have won the Brownlow in his first year of footy.
He went head-to-head with Tom Green last week, and when the game was right on, he would have given the nod to Matt Rao last week.
Yep.
He's a very, very fine footballer.
Couple of good fifth years there, let me tell you. So well done. We might have to re-rank that draft at some stage, the fifth year, 2019 draft.
Well, why don't we re-rank it according to your leaderboard?
I like it.
Well, that's not necessarily accurate.
Well, why don't we do it that way and do it in another manner?
Ah, okay.
And just see which one spits out might spit out an identical result. That went
quick, didn't it?
That flew, mate. Jeez, you brought some good gear onto the table today.
Yeah.
That's it. The footy's up next. Don't go anywhere. The Dogs and the Bombers, heaps on the line. We've been here for the good people at Berwick Mini. Their mini garage's up and about. Go and have a look on the weekend.